In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hello and welcome to Imps Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. A link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chop-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the newsletter over on Social Suplex. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and everybody who has contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes that was set to be relatively simple, with only a 80-minute episode of Smackers to work with, and yes, technically a 2-hour episode of Raw, but when you cut out all the just the beginner stuff and all the fluff, it really wasn't that long of a show to really get through. However, then the news broke today. I haven't really had the time to properly think about my words well, just because of the like real-life situation where I was just knackered when I got back, and when I saw the news. It's just like, oh. So it's not been me recording it where I've like written anything down and really thought about it, but the news broke about Hulk Hogan passing away. You can bet your ass the Social Suplex chats lit up in that moment. Fair to say, not exactly, you know, pro Hogan, given they're not, you know, pro racism or pro abuse or pro anti-union. Like, there's been a lot of reasons why they wouldn't be particularly mourning the loss, and instead, you know, the exact opposite, I guess. But I do think it's like wrong just to be like, oh, he was a controversial figure, but da da da. Well, no, you talk about them both in the same breath. He was an like, incredibly important person in the history of wrestling, be that both for his backstage politicking and for like the fact he, I guess technically, was very good at his job of being that charismatic top guy that drew the people in. He generally was very, very important to wrestling history, but also an out-and-out racist. And obviously this year he was on the campaign trail for Donald Trump. His very last memory in wrestling in front of a big, large crowd where he came out, tried to sell his beer, got booed out of the building, and then off he went. And that was the kind of the final showing of Hulk Hogan in a WWE environment, which I think is as important in terms of remembering him. So yes, I'll bring up entertainment created and the respect people had for him, but then also the fact that that respect was lost, and he's somebody where on the day he's died there's people all over the world celebrating it, which is maybe a sign that he wasn't this perfect person. To put it simply, like, if you haven't paid any attention and you saw that reaction, it might make you just want to dig in and say, oh, was he not this big wrestling star that everybody loved? Which, in fact, I had like so many messages from friends just being like, also, oh, it's not like a big moment where everybody's mourning the loss of someone who's, it's just like, oh no, like maybe in Trump circles, but like basically everybody I knew was not really in that camp. There has been like the, you know, lighting of cigars, there's been the opening of champagne, but then there's also been just that discussion of, but he was also incredibly important to the wrestling world, and his history is just, it's so tied into that. And I feel like for me, if you're going to be somebody who was like, no, he's really important to wrestling history, you have to talk about him positively, he's like, not just positively though. Like, if you're going to just talk about him positively, then that's dishonest. Like, that's not his wrestling legacy. Like, unfortunately for him, as much as he would love for his wrestling legacy to be this top beloved guy, his legacy is also of the politicking, is also of shutting down a union, is also to do with all the Gawker stuff and the precedent set with that in terms of people being able to get away with things and with not apologising for the racism thing, instead apologising for getting caught. There's a lot of reasons for us to see the celebrations that we did today. Feel like that's his legacy, really, if anything, of this guy who was beloved by millions, then rightfully lost that love. It's fair to say that he's done quite a damaging job if that's the turnaround that's happened over the course of his career, from beloved to genuinely celebrated when he died. Like, that's quite a turnaround. A lot of kids grew up loving him and then found out the man he was. So it could easily just turn into like a just reminiscing, talking about Hogan past stuff, going through his wrestling contributions or anything. But I feel like I do want to stick to the format. I don't want to do a like Hogan reminiscing thing. I don't want to go back to Hogan's court trials or to the NWO or to the going through like the earlier eras of the Madison Square Garden shows, or the absolute favourite line of mine from wrestling. Kind of, it is a Hogan line, and I mean that in a jokey way. The line that just made me laugh the most the first time I heard it. He's doing a Dungeon of Doom thing, and he puts his hand in, under some water in a cave, and he goes, ah, it's not hot. And that just made me laugh so much. I think I was doing film at university at the time, and I just watched that and I was just like, okay, character-wise, why is he expecting it to be hot? I just found that so funny. Just watching that clip with no context. He's walking in a cave. Hulkster, what was in your mind? What was your character thinking in that moment? Why was he expecting running water in a cave to be hot? it's an amazing insight into the man's mind and his inability to improv. But that's why for me, like, it's important to remember the bad as well. The other Hulk Hogan quote I jumped to immediately is the famous one that came out during the Gorka trial. So it is both sides of the coin for me. I have got genuinely on TV in character memories and things, but then off TV, dickhead is putting it lightly. Yes, it has made me go back and remember, what did I actually like about the different stuff that he offered on the TV? So obviously for me, it's all retrospective. I didn't start watching properly till 2005. So it's all in retrospect. Watching WCW stuff on Daily Motion, that was my like learning about the wrestling world type stuff, because that was all archived. It was all like over and done with by the time I got into wrestling. Yes, I'm going to say like one of my favourite things. I guess it means he does represent the dumb of wrestling. And I am somebody who's, I'm up for a bit of dumb. As much as I talk about putting all the different film language things together and the production of it all and like character arts making sense and things, weirdly I don't click that much with spooky shit, but if you're doing just something that's just dumb and silly, I might get behind it. It's the kind of dumb you do it, because I don't find slapstick dumb funny. Because I feel like that Hogan one, where it's dumb, but it's dumb because he's trying to not be dumb. I think that's why it works for me. You are revealed as dumb by trying to do this spooky improvisation walking through a cave. If you haven't seen the clip, I mean, now's not a bad time to watch it. It's like a Dungeon of Doom skit. They did loads of them where they just tried to lure Hulk Hogan, and it's just for some reason they're in their cave. It's so stupid. I love it. It's not good. You won't be in for like a good ending. So. Anyway, I have got two shows to talk about. As I said, it's not really a lot to get into with these shows. We're building up towards SummerSlam. Last week was a bit bigger because we had the weekend of counter programming and we had Monday Night Raw getting its programs underway for SummerSlam. So this is more the next step. We got the programs underway last week, but this week was more about setting up those next stages of the stories or the character arcs or what is the groundwork actually going to be. And on SmackDown, we got straight into that with a contract signing between John Cena and Cody Rhodes. The show overall, 79 minutes edited on Netflix. Like, oh, that's the stuff. Short and sweet. And this was 3 hours where it aired, right? My God, there's just nothing on that show worth keeping. I'm down to like 80 minutes. That's insane. Anyway, let's jump on over to the main event of SmackDown and talk about a man going through a table. It's a contract signing. Someone went through a table. Jump on over to SmackDown.
Cody with contract in hand.
He's got the contract and he's going up to the top rope with the contract binder that was rejected by Cena in hand. Right through the table! Cody puts Cena right through the table with a splash!
I may have already spoiled it before I played the clip, but did they avoid the trope of a contract signing ending in a table bump? Not only did they not, they fully lent into it in a hilarious fashion. Hey, I bet you've never seen the bump done as a splash with one of them holding the contract in hand, made all the funnier by Cody's splash style consisting more of falling than flying. Insert Toy Story reference. For the table talk, they went into a two-fade shot, which showed why you have that digital divider between the two. But also, they didn't do any cinematic language to set up it was going to happen or like some form of fadey blur type of thing, and then it stays on that one. It was more just this new shot came out of nowhere where they're trying something out. But they didn't really teach you, the viewer, the language of how it's going to work before it just like, bang, new shot. What do you think? It's like, oh, but like, in my head, it's like you do the John Cena Cody Rhodes, you establish where they are in the side-by-sides, then go to this side-by-side. Is it like you maybe cutting between them and then you go to the double shot rather than double shot then you go between them? I still feel like you'd have to do that with fade, so you see a bit of an overlap as they're fading and then you kind of stop, and like almost like you're doing like a midway focus kind of point between the two of it, which I agree for WWE would be far too much effort. It's far too much effort for what I would kind of would want from this. Like, you don't need to be doing those kind of shot fades for contract signing. Just for this shot specifically, because the shot itself is like faded and you've got that crossing between the two, it just didn't quite feel right. And I looked at the shot, my first instinct was, oh, that's why you have like a divider between the two so that you don't see that blur in the middle. special. But also, like, as I'm analysing it, it's like, oh no, they are like trying something. They just haven't done the bit beforehand to get you ready for it to happen. It's just bang, new shot, and you're not like, whoa, this is weird, different, and not sure it quite works for what they're going for. Appreciate something different, though. Like, when I talk about WWE's production, just them trying out something new, even if it's just a minor shot like this, like, yeah, this is what I want to say. I don't want you staying with the same safe stuff. If it doesn't work, you did try something. And I'm totally not on, like, social media side of something like this, where if it's just a bit, why did you do it type of thing? And I'm like, no, do this kind of thing. If it doesn't work, you try something else. You don't do it. Don't do it again. It's all about just trying out what works and see what people latch onto. This might have worked a bit better if you have conditioned the viewer to be ready for some form of crossing fade shot. But there's just none of that prep beforehand. Just your normal cut into, and then bang, you got this. And then afterwards, they go back straight back to the back and forth shot. So the shot doesn't come back again. It's not like a technique that's used within the scene or anything. It's literally just this one shot, and then they go back to their normal way of filming it. Almost like they gave up halfway during production. Whilst they're filming it, they're like, we don't think this quite works. I just didn't go back to it. Anyway, their story, honestly, at the least heated point. Like, it would genuinely feel weird for Cody to win now, but I can't argue they didn't try to get that fire going again. Cena telling Cody, I won't be at SummerSlam. I'm filming a Netflix movie. Does that mean that Netflix are kind of the corporate bad guys? That was tied into it with the TKO bad guys. Hilarious in-universe, as that means WWE ran an entire King of the Ring tournament, fully knowing one of the champions had a chance of being unavailable for a movie everybody knew was being filmed. John Cena says, as he starts talking to the crowd, as he's saying he's apologising to Cody, and he's got somebody he wants to say, that he's just going to be too tired after filming this film that everybody knows he's making. Which, out of context, is just, falling back in reality. Apparently, there's a bit of a rumour going around that this was a rub on Pat McAfee. He took legit time off to be with his family and whatnot, after generally feeling burnt out and mentally. And in classic WWE fashion, whenever anybody takes time off to be with their family, no, fuck you, we're going to mock you. It's just like, oh, what an amazing working environment to be in. Honestly, for the way I was watching this, I felt like this character setup was similar to the police stuff we got elsewhere on the show, which I'll get into in a second, where it just feels a little bit forced and hokey so that you can do the character stuff you want to. Cody saying in his words that he won't flinch like he did at WrestleMania before getting to show us by beating up John Cena, title shot to the head and all. The Cody stuff, that's the character setup stuff that really worked. The Cena bit that came out, I was like, okay, so we need Cody to show it as well. He's told us it, and he didn't hesitate at the King of Ring, but we need to see him not hesitating against Cena specifically, and they did the title shot stuff here as well. A shame that forcing somebody's unconscious hand afterwards to sign a contract, lie on TV, 100% that makes the contract null and void. Before Rhodes got the final pop announcing their match will be a street fight, it's wrestling world logic. I've unconsciously got you to sign this contract because he's a bad guy. That means it's binding and legal. But yes, the match as well, being a street fight, another first instant reaction of, another AEW stab, a second reaction of, no, this is just for run-ins. And I can bet bottom dollar, not top dollar, bottom dollar, that they're going to brawl through the crowd nice and slowly, get back into the ring, and the crowd are going to be all heated when, I don't know, Cody kicks out or stuff after taking an A on the outside or something like that. And Cody starts his fight back, that's when interference has happened. And it can be like, oh, we didn't give you Rock there because they gave you him at SummerSlam. I'm not expecting the Rock. I'm just saying that as soon as I saw Street Fight, my mind's going, I'm not thinking, oh, this is like a straight up AEW thing. It was my initial kind of thought, but I very quickly moved on and I said, oh wait, no, this is for interferences. It's WWE stuff. And it's a lot easier to hide the kind of like blare of the first match if you've got a bunch of shenanigans. And Street Fight, oh, it's open to shenanigans. The fans are going to chant that they want tables, and you can give them tables. You can get a Slim Jim sponsorship for those tables. But yes, I found the usage of setting up Cena not being there and playing that to the crowd and Cody, I found that just for me just a little bit forced and cartoony in the way that it's done. Surprisingly, the Cena heel run has actually just been just a little bit cartoony at times. Like, who could have seen that coming? So, honestly, it's more that I call myself an idiot for not seeing that coming. As I was like, oh, like a heel John Cena could completely change how he does stuff. It's like, oh, this is cartoony too. Actually, I should have seen that coming. That makes sense. If I'd looked at it honestly and logically, I should have come to that conclusion, but I didn't. I just reacted like, oh, that's a cool idea. Didn't think about it. If I'd thought about it for a second. Anyway, talking about thinking about things for a second, we got a steel cage match set up for SummerSlam. Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu, they started the show with a wee little car crash. Starting the show in the parking lot in the aftermath of a Bloodline car collision. Although they're calling themselves the MFTs nowadays. Don't know how I feel about that. That was our through show storyline, with the policeman having to look at his clipboard to find the phrase, he's a person of interest. Just top tier acting. It's amazing work there. But hey, at least they attempted blocking. Like, it's not, the blocking is often shit and makes no sense.
sense.
Why is Jacob Fatu the only wrestler hanging out in the parking lot like that? What is this, like, environmental stuff going on here? It's almost like an amateur theatre production where, you know, they've got a bigger budget than to just have people just, like, in the empty environment, essentially. Or like a WWE video game, where it's an empty environment just because the, you know, the computer graphics only can take so much memory. So back in the day, you just have the person you're going to go to just hanging out in this big empty thing. But that's how they film it now. Adam Pearce immediately meets the policeman, walks around, and, like, right on the corner is the man they're looking for, but seemingly no real reason why they're there. I should probably lift my bar a little higher than blocking exists for me to give praise when it's like, yeah, but is it any good? And it's all just a bit for an arrival reveal later just to get that pop. So immediately I'm like, ah, I feel like I should lift my bar higher than blocking exists when I'm talking about these segments. But then I see the reason they did it. It's like, oh, this was just to get Fatu a pop later when they were thinking the line of, well, what in the past have we done to make somebody feel like a badass? It was like, oh, Steve Austin would always have some kind of interaction with the cops, and him dealing with the cops gave him that feel of being a dangerous person and a badass. So let's just do that. Solo later cut a promo, blasted Fatu before Big Jacob was brought back out with the police, saying, "We reviewed the footage and determined it wasn't you." It's okay, Matt, just don't think about it. It's all just a reveal pop. That's your working logics of this world. Don't matter. Don't think about it. Don't think about why the police arrested him based on what. They hadn't reviewed the footage. Why were they looking for him? Who had directed him that way? And why did they just go and arrest him immediately without any further? Don't think about it. It's fine. All this is about getting Jacob Fatu a pop when he's revealed and then he's walking to the ring and he's got the police flashing lights in the background as he then walks out into the arena, and then you got the pop of the police arresting Solo Sikoa later, even though that also doesn't make sense. It's just for the pops. Don't think about it. Stop thinking about it. It's just for the silly pops. I earlier said I like dumb. This is dumb. This is what I said I like. Big Jimmy Uso and Big Jacob beat up all of Solo Sikoa's men. Hikuleo did his job of protecting the champion, but Cobb and Loa ate all the chair shots. And then we got the final laugh of the way they did the arrest reveal with Solo Sikoa pointing his arm at Jacob Fatu in the ring, just like, "Hey, you're gonna get arrested," and then in just actually really good comedic timing, the policeman just kind of waited until Solo finished his laugh before grabbing and twisting his arm and immediately putting him into handcuffs. Like, it was comedically well timed, but it is, yeah, so cartoony, so goofy. But I won't lie that I did chuckle at the end there. I saved myself with the I like dumb things. I did laugh at it. Just don't think about it. Don't think about any world logic workings. Just be like, yay, the pop thing happened, yay. And then immediately onto the other notes. After the parking lot cold open, we were straight into Flair and Bliss talking backstage. They are called now the Allies of Convenience, printed on the back of Bliss's shirt, and all with "We're Not Friends" on the front. Honestly, this was the quickest a WWE show has gotten to the first match in a long time. 7 minutes in and I'm already watching Rodriguez versus Flair. Already? 7 minutes into a WWE show? This doesn't happen on Raw. This is a one-off. Like, 5 minutes into the Raw show. I think CM Punk's music hits around then, or like shortly after. Like, we're not even into the arena 5 minutes into the Raw show. But also, I am watching the edited version, so for all I know, there was just like something that they cut out. But like I said on the Evolution show, this much-needed arc for Charlotte has started to get over after the initial weeks of mediocre reception. Like, get ready. They're actually going to get that woman over as a goodie. It's working. They're doing it. This is getting over. Priest faced Melo as the angry man took out his anger on the poor lad. All grumpy after Aleister Black kicked him backstage last week. After the Dutchman himself was pissed about R-Truth beating him up with a roll-up. Ended in DQ thanks to Aleister in a black suit pushing poor Priest dick first onto the top rope. Black mass and the delivering of words. Got to head closer to the SummerSlam card getting filled out with this one. I still don't really know where Aleister Black fits in to this SmackDown card. He's currently doing this feud with Priest, but I wouldn't say he's particularly standing out as either a character or kind of the way they've got his matches flowing. It's just something odd about it. It's the same. It feels like a very similar problem that Rusev has got, where it almost feels like they know they should be featuring these people, but they haven't actually got any ideas, so what they're given is just below par a bit. And they know that they should feature Damian Priest as well, that if, like, he's a guy that they kind of should at least be keeping at the upper mid-card level. Like, it's an odd feeling. They don't really have a home yet. I'm not saying they're, like, not going to have a home. They're just kind of weirdly existing at the moment. For all I know, they're going to find their place, they're going to get that thing that just makes it work. But right now, they feel like like they don't feel like they're in, they haven't really found their place on the card. But speaking of someone who did have, who has just immediately found their place, Stephanie Vaquer also got a run out, a rematch here on Smackers, just to remind us that she could go for either champion in Paris. She beat Alba Fire and that fed into Monday Night Raw. Oh, and last week the Wyatt Six beat the Street Profits for the tag titles. I've given it the same level of attention here that they did when they wrote it. A four-team number one contenders match between DIY, Motor City Machine Guns, Fraxium and Andrade and Phoenix. I don't know what Phoenix was wearing, a full body suit of questionable fitting. Andrade and Phoenix won and will face the Wyatts next week. Like, this wasn't like a straight up just Rey Fénix just deciding to wear a outfit on this occasion. If it wasn't that, if this was like a somebody backstage at WWE has been like, we think we should dress you like this too, and we think it will differentiate you in a good way. And I'm just like, Phoenix's look was so cool already, and this is hokey as hell. Like a slightly baggy, shitty, cheap looking thing. Like, if this is Phoenix either losing his gear and he just needed something, this is like a one-off idea to see if it works or whatever. This fits fine, take out, change your outfits, whatnot. But if this is a directive for someone in creative or backstage or somebody, then immediately I've got questions. Just why? He already has such a cool look. This is making a cool wrestler not cool. What is this? Anyway, yeah, they will face tag champions next week in filling for time over a two-week period on a show. I don't know what they're setting up for SummerSlam. If they are, it's a card that quickly needs just things filled up, because they're going for that WrestleMania feel of a card, but they're trying to get it done within 3 weeks because they just crammed all their stuff with counter programming and way too many shows, so they haven't actually built their big two-night event. And that's the reason why it feels weird for Cody to win if he does, because we had that big WrestleMania build, but it felt like a huge deal. This feels quick and sudden. It doesn't have like that gravitas at all. It's just happening. It's just stuff happening. And like WWE is like, still ticket-wise, they're still pretty hot. The shows are gonna be well attended. Feel like they're going to be live. People are going to be excited and whatever. It just feels like this is an indication of maybe when we get towards the end of the year, that strong momentum might not be there, because it's not there in their TV shows at the moment. Because I thought it would heat up towards SummerSlam, but because of all the counter-programming and stuff, it's not really got going until like this week or like last week with SmackDown. It's a strange place to be in. I wasn't expecting it. I thought they were going to be like hitting their stride towards SummerSlam now. We'd feel that direction. It still just feels like stuff happening. I feel like if it's what we've seen here on SmackDown, if it's not going to have taken place before SummerSlam, I've still got it in my head like, but it'll happen at SummerSlam, right? There'll be those angles that then send us into the momentum to at least Survivor Series or the end of the year, or what John Cena's second half is going to be. We've seen lots of articles popping up about a possible heel turn, but I just kind of see that as, yep, that's because there's not much here. So you end up analysing, just trying to analyse deeper. It's like, no, there must be a deeper thing happening. But I just watch it and like, we're analysing for that deeper thing because there isn't actually anything here. There's not much to talk about or bite on. It's more that I recognise it from the Vince years. You would end up making up your own story to get yourself invested. And I kind of feel like that's what's happening with the double turn. Like, fans could will it into existence just by like, no, I feel like this is the right thing to do. But the story is of Cody not flinching. He told you the story flat out. It doesn't scream of a heel turn, it just screams of it's not that deep or complex because you haven't really got the time to do anything else. So yeah, it's actually quite a meh feeling build towards SummerSlam. Anyway, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw, the longest episode in weeks. Like, don't worry, you got 8 minutes till the opening promo man started talking. So we're already way further down. But let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw and let's jump on to the main event with Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns.
Oh no, 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 no! Bronson Reed had said that tsunamis destroyed islands, and that's what he was trying to do there.
Heyman in the ring with his Killer Bees, his big bronze, Bron and Bronson Incorporated. But with Roman's long entrance, you don't have time for some poorly time stretching. The OTC, official Chump Chump, on out to the excited crowd, using Heyman to make them care about a tag match with the Beefy Boys. Seth Rollins is going to be gone for a long, long time, emphasised Paul Heyman, very affirmatively, in character using the leadership void to feign an offer of succouring up. Outside of the kind of kayfabe world, it just felt like a very strong attempt to try and be like, Seth Rollins is going to be gone for an absolute long time. Because last week I was like, maybe you do like still go ahead with it because this is the planned character beat. You don't have to always like have that appearance of outsmarting the audience. Sometimes it's fine to just deliver the thing. And I think this is an occasion where you just deliver the thing. Don't try and get that desperate need to be like, no, we're way smarter than you. Just have him cash in. And I feel like what Paul Heyman did here, where he's setting it up to happen, I'd just go with it. Just do it. Don't get in your own head about how trying to outsmart your audience. Just do it. I feel like momentum-wise, far, far better. SummerSlam needs something. Like, there's just so little momentum going into it. I feel like creatively, after the show, you just need some form of spark. And I feel like another exciting cash-in could be it. I mean, the exact tactic they used for Evolution. So just repeat it. Just do it again. You're doing a rush show where the build doesn't feel quite right? End with a cash-in and get the crowd really excited. Reigns told Heyman what's what. Roman is the one that brought Heyman into the bloodline. Heyman's the one that threw it all away. The young Steiner, the one to step in front of the former wise man. He was playing the role of the disrespectful youth, calling Reigns an old dog and worthless. And you're damn right, Bron called himself all the kinds of dogs too. Top, big, Yorkshire Collie. Reigns just pretended he didn't hear any of that and jumped the two. Losing the fight, I was like, oh, that was nice to see. It's Roman Reigns, I'm just expecting him to beat them both down. But I keep forgetting they have put the effort in to make them feel like more than just your generic heavies. So Roman Reigns fought them 2-on-1 and lost. And he was set to get himself tsunamied right before the Yeats chance summoned an Uso, double spear and pose to end. So they're trying their best to get us invested in a Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker versus Roman Reigns and Jey Uso match. And honestly, it's the kind of match which sells the Seth Rollins injury really well, because it feels like this is a rushed planned match and they were going to Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins. That's what it feels like. And I feel like that is it does a huge good service to the Seth Rollins angle. And by that, I mean, it feels like the plan B, which makes the fact that if we see Seth Rollins come out and cash in, or if we see it within the month of the show, then it's just all the stranger that they decided to do this and purposely give just like a B-show kind of feel match to Roman Reigns on your big two-night SummerSlam card that you're trying to make feel like WrestleMania. Like, it's a very odd creative decision to purposely put on a lesser match to try and get that bigger reaction. But jumping over to the World Championship match, which we might see a cash in on, CM Punk and Gunther, with Punk winning the Gauntlet match last week. Be happy with the B prize, Punk, or be ready for the Seth Rollins cash in. Punk gave his respects to the champion's wrestling ability, but promised to beat him. Gunther then on out as the crowd chanted, "You tapped out," making sure to look rocked every time they chanted it. Like, this man has just gotten so good at these segments. The champion called out the man's ego, like, "Hey, me too, but my ego is justified. My ego is based on results," making the character beat for Punkerton nice and clear. The best in the world is the man who holds the World Heavyweight Championship, which just, oh, it just feels so perfect for CM Punk to either look like he's going to conquer that mountain or conquer that mountain and then lose. Then we got the final note as Gunther promised to beat the Chicago man and prove he's the best in the world. Just a quick little promo to establish where both lads stand in this wee little title feud. The only caveat being that next week will immediately swing into the go-home angle, but again, a huge two-night event that they're trying to make feel like WrestleMania, and one of your world title matches has got like 1 week of character build and then immediately into the go-home. I just every time I'm looking at this, like, I feel like I cannot stress how just odd of a choice that is. Even odder when I actually look at the run of the schedule, and they put this on themselves with counter-programming. Like, it's just like such an odd decision to do that. My main little gripe at the moment is that expectation for them to try and be smarter than the fans and not do the cash-in at SummerSlam, instead do it at a different show. The reason I'll call it a gripe is that's, again, WWE setting up a character note and then kind of disregarding it when they do the big moment of the angle. Like, the main character note for Seth Rollins is that CM Punk never becomes a world champion. So why would CM Punk be allowed to have that feeling of being a champion and then have it taken away? You then have to do like a retroactive thing with Seth Rollins of explaining, I want him to feel what it was like before he took it all away from him. But that's not what his character was saying beforehand. And it's just a little bit of a character inconsistency on the purpose of getting one over on the fans. And that's why I just do it at SummerSlam. Just do it. The momentum, correct point. And I feel like the SummerSlam crowd will want it. And like Evolution, with on a show that's kind of been rushed and you want to make it feel like a bigger deal, that Money in the Bank cash in a big match like that, that's really going to help. And then into the Monday Night Raw other notes. Stephanie Vaquer spent the show saying hello to the SummerSlam Triple Threat ladies. A second make good match with Io got a strong reaction. Vaquer is the hotly over new lass, but always great to see Io getting such great reactions. Ended in nothing anyway, so no winner between the two for a second time. On this occasion, Naomi taking advantage of Chelsea Green's interfering. It's time for our weekly Judgment Day check-in. AJ Styles in disguise as a valet during the walk-ins. I hope you get clear today. He's just been so caring about his opponent. Then there's a janitor. Whoa, whoa, whoa. The floor is wet. Don't want you to slip. To the New Day as they were kind of mourning backstage. Tried to get that contract happening. And then later in the show, finally the contract got signed. And then Angle, where I'm watching it being like, so the doctor has brought AJ over to just definitely look at the contract to make sure it's all signed and everything. And then Dom jumps on behind. The Doctor stands back, and then eventually the Doctor gets called up. Didn't it just look like the Doctor was in on it? Just like, I was like, if you stay there, you get him to come over, I'll jump on behind. It just looked like it was, because obviously it is staged, because is there that WWE blocking thing again, was like, they're technically doing it, but they're not doing it well, which I will say is better than not doing it. But it's just a bit shit. Sami Zayn got his second match with Karrion Kross after the man attacked him on a ramp the previous show. Cheeky cheating and a steel pipe to the ribs. Kross pinned Zayn with his nose bleeding after an exploder, meaning the post-match kiss of where Kross kissed Scarlet on the face meant that Scarlet got some blood on her face. And it's just an immediate ew. Sheamus and Rusev, they had a match in the Irishman's patented first match after the opening promo banger spot. Did its job and gave each lad the room to show their fight. The man who cracked first, losing as Rusev frustration led him, exposing the turnbuckle and grabbing for a shillelagh, both failing, and he ate a brogue instead. Same commentary as I gave to Aleister Black. He's having these matches with Sheamus, and it seems to be the effort is they'll have Rusev have these banger matches with Sheamus, and he'll get over in those matches. But kind of similar to Aleister Black, though, doesn't really feel like he's integrated that well character-wise at the moment. Tag teams. New Day, Creed Brothers, and LWO's Phoenix Mendoza in a number one contenders match to face the Irish Judgment lads. Dragon Lee helped him, but this match did good in making the LWO lads the exciting one of the three. Speaking of tag teams, obviously makes sense for the next stage in the Bayley and Valkyria story to be a putting together, how will they coexist, be against the tag team champions. Been a few years since we were drinking that in every feud, but the hangover is still very real. And Becky's so good in this role that it's hard to stay mad. She had her promo before the match, and it's just, I'm really enjoying her in this role. A nice bit of crack, a nice bit of fun. And that was Monday Night Raw. An absolutely like bog standard week two of three in a build of like a 3 week build, which you would normally get for a B show, which is why I keep coming back to the point that just feels wild that they've curtailed their own build to their biggest show of the summer. Big push for it to be a 2-night event. They would have sold tickets vastly like well beforehand. Like, I've not got any concern. This isn't me analysing, being like, oh, the build's been crap. How are they expecting to get a good da da da? It's like, but no, like past present, it takes time for this kind of thing to kick in. It takes time for a fan reaction of, oh, this show's just kind of on like routinely just a bit air now. That's not really reflected in tickets until well before down the line. Like, people make plans, they make travel plans. These are all done in advance, and they get excited for the shows. Like, it's fine. Perception like takes a bit of time to shift. We've literally just seen it with AEW, and they've just hit that pinnacle of, no, the changes have officially happened momentum-wise at All In this week, when quality-wise they were hitting it out of the park for months. Yeah, it still feels like, when I say WWE on a downturn, it's just because it currently feels like stuff is just happening. But if I use like Charlotte Flair as an example, with Charlotte Flair, it's a purposeful angle to give her that character to actually use something with. So this could all just be character stuff, which you can then use to do something. And that's why I'm not able to drop it. I'm not able to go, oh, they're crap, and the SummerSlam's going to be the same deal. We're going to continue just to be character stuff, maybe until the John Cena thing's finished, and they have to get on their feet for WrestleMania. That's the way we talked during the Vince era, where they could be crap for most of the year, but they have to then suddenly hit it. Having a direction from Rumble to WrestleMania forced them to focus. But I have a higher respect for the kind of rating style than I did during the Vince era, which is why in my head I'm like, well, I'm not able to drop the idea of SummerSlam then actually kicking some momentum into gear and just getting some focus at SummerSlam for where we might be going. But there's also I'm also not dropping the other side. There's a very high chance that SummerSlam also feels like the rest of the summer, where things just happen. And weirdly in my head, Cody winning's one of them. Like, the Cody win won't have like the most momentum in the world. I don't feel like the double turn has enough heat behind it for it to properly work. The fans will react to it big, because it's a moment, it's a big moment, but they haven't done the work beforehand. Like, in my mind, it doesn't make sense to the Cody character to be doing this stuff. Obviously, it depends on the story they tell in the match. There's always a way. My thing with film writing, of if you put in the effort, you can convince me of anything in your world. Specifically, you can make it make sense in your world. If you want to do the double turn, you can tell me that story in the match and make it make sense, and like, I won't question it in that way. But that's not how WWE write. Their characters have like no kind of setup for this turn to happen. So if it happens, it's Vince style, where they literally just do it for the moment. It's on a dime. It just happens. Like, oh, okay, we're back to that, are we? Anyway, yeah, we'll see. We'll see SummerSlam. Either it's the moment, just like with AEW, where it convinces you they're on a hot run. This show either convinces me they're on a creative cold run, or it's like, you've got ideas, it's just not clicking, and you've got too many shows, so you're not allowing anything to flesh out, type of thing. That's it. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about the Go Home Monday Night Raw and the show here on SmackDown, which I feel like is very likely going to be a Hulk Hogan memorial show. So I'll bring you whatever happens on this show next week. And just a lot of like positive momentum at the moment within Social Suplex. Obviously, there's the buzz of Post All In and all that stuff. And this week has been me listening to the ladies and the guys who went to All In last week, just hearing them talking so happily and exuberantly about their trips. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about those shows. Thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner, always appreciated, never taken for granted. I'll be back next week to talk about the Go Home Monday Night Raw and the Hulk Hogan Memorial Smackers, so you don't have to watch them. And with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.